This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Swung on, a high fly to left. Back goes Melendez on the track. He's at the wall, and she's gone! A Stantonian home run. He drove a high fly deep left into the Yankee bullpen to give the Yankees a 3-2 lead.
John Sterling is back. How about that? Yankees radio with the call. The New Yorkers win last night. The Mets put away Filthy, and the Yankees one win away from taking out the Kansas City Royals in KC. Good morning, Metroplex. Sean, RJ, and Bobby with you on DFW Sports Station. Your home of the Rangers and Cowboys is 105.3 The Fan. So we had those two games with the New York teams. The Dodgers absolutely dominate the Padres in San Diego 8-0, and the Tigers shut out the Guardians 3-0. Ken Rosenthal, Baseball Insider, not doing his usual work yesterday?
That's interesting because so the day before, he had put out this article. It was actually day of the game, of game three. It was day of the game. He put out this article that Bobby had talked about yesterday where he talked about Machado, Profar, and Fernando Tatis. And in the article, he said that Profar was the kid who pulls the fire alarm and is like, who, me? I didn't do it. And Machado was kind of boisterous. And then he said that Tatis was like the smiling, dancing peacock.
And I still don't know exactly what that means.
Like a peacock, like they push their feathers up to show off.
Yeah.
Right? They're showboats. Basically, he's called them a showboat. And they didn't like it. The Padres did not like it. So in the broadcast, you know, you'll see, and they didn't, something like in the World Series, they'll have one person's, you know, designated to this team and one to that team, and they'll be in the dugout. Well, Rosenthal's going back and forth. And in the other series, they got people going back and forth. Well, Rosenthal was doing his hit on Manny Machado in front of the Dodgers dugout, not in front of the Padres dugout. You would think they would be doing it in front of the Padres dugout, but you can make the case that he wanted Machado in the background and he was on that side because he was on the third base side. But as the game went on, he did not do any hits for the Padres dugout. And the Padres were like, yeah, but no, you're out. So that's just something as the series and the playoffs wear on. If because I think Fox has the NL, and obviously the Padres go to the World Series, they're going to want them to do hits like this. So this is interesting how this is going to work.
Which, after Tatis hit that home run the other night, he shared to his Instagram story a photo of him standing at home plate, and then he posted an emoji of, like, a disco dancing, and then a peacock, and then, like, the shrug emoji, like, good. Yeah. So they definitely took notice, and they did not like it.
Look, I don't necessarily disagree with everything Rosenthal said, but this is what I talked about yesterday with being reporter or opinionator. Windhorse Shams Woj. Woj not giving really strong analysis. Shams doesn't give any analysis. Windhorse does a little bit more. Ken Rosenthal, I'm thinking of as a reporter, insider and reporter. So you want to start opining and you want to start putting your slant on things, go ahead and do it. But don't get mad when you end up getting iced out. I also add him to the list of baseball insiders. I'm happy to see him get his. So screw you, Ken Rosenthal, your little bow tie. So I think it's funny. You want to give the opinion on it. I don't think he's necessarily wrong because Profar, they were trying to incite that crowd as well. Now, who knows what the hell in Los Angeles those, you know, those inmates were saying to the players, but Rosenthal, he was a little bit strong with the opinion there, so he got.
Yeah, he will. He more than other insiders, he will take. He'll put opinions out there.
Passon will say some stuff too.
Occasionally, he will.
Yeah, get suspended. Yep.
He will say some stuff, and I don't know if that's just the nature of baseball because they've got 162 games and it's a million. They got to say something every day. But they generally will go a little bit harder.
It's just hard as an insider, like, for them to, I think, level any opinions because they have to talk to so many people. And so any opinion could potentially get them shut off from a resource.
You changing the format of the playoffs?
I hope so, because this is not what what we're asking for here. The way it is now is, and just to go back, the season ends on Sunday. All right. Do you have your wild card team? So you have your 1 and 2 seed in each division. They get a bye. So season ends on Sunday, day off Monday. They play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, if necessary on Thursday. Day off Friday, start the division series on Saturday. So the team that is the 1 and 2 seed goes from Sunday to Saturday without playing. And then they took a day off, and then they played another game. So you had basically 2 games in 9 days for the 1 seeds. All the series were 1-1, and then the first 3 went to 2 games to 1 with the lower-seeded team, the non-bye team, going up 2 games to 1, having a clinching game at home. It's a massive disadvantage. In the history of this playoff format, which is this is its 3rd year, the National League has never had a 1 or 2 seed advance to the league championship series. They've always gotten knocked out. The only American League teams to ever make it through have been Houston and the Yankees. That's it. The other ones have gotten knocked out. Baltimore got knocked out by the Rangers last year. So they're not gonna want to go through this and constantly have the 4 best teams who have proved it over 6 months get knocked out early. So I think what they're going to do is they're going to have to make a change. I don't know if they're going to make a change now because it's only a 3-year sample, but they're going to have to. I got some options for you. All right, so option 1, you end the season on Sunday as normal. You have an off day on Monday in case, like what happened this year where you needed the Mets and Braves to play to have a to get in to finish your season. You do a doubleheader on Tuesday. Doubleheader in the wild card round on Tuesday. And then if you need a game 3, game 3 is on Wednesday, and the ALDS starts immediately after on Thursday. No off day. And the NLDS starts immediately after. No off day. So that means the top 2 teams have 2 fewer days off to not get rusty, and the wild card teams, their pitching is gassed, and they need to have an advantage. The division winners need an advantage, because that is not enough of an advantage over the 6 months.
Doubleheader with the same teams playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm out on that. Baseball will be out on that. You're robbing an extra day of revenue and watching. And then Bassick, you want to talk about all these stats. Bassick gave like a doubleheader stat
right,
where you don't win both games. So I'm out on the doubleheader. What's next?
It would just limit days.
I will point out, too, a lot of times whenever you have the Phillies were not playing as well over the last 3 weeks of the season as like the Mets were.
Right.
Mets and were so a lot of times these teams are just, they are getting hot.
Yeah.
And that's part of why they're still losing these series, is because they're getting them at the wrong time.
Option 2, keep the timeline the same way it is. Play Sunday, end of the season, off day Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for the wild card, off day Friday, start Saturday. But you make it a 7-game series. Right? So that gives the division winner, you know, a little bit of a do-over, if you will. They get a day or a game or two to get the rust out, and then 7 games should be theoretically easier for them to win than a 5-game series. That's option 2.
I want 7 games.
All right.
For the better team.
It's more money, too, I would think. Like, I don't know why the MLB Players Association may not be, but like the league themselves, I would think they'd be on board with it.
Option 3. Again, keep the schedule the same way. Start it on Saturday, but and you also keep a 5-game series, but all 5 games are at the division winner's home.
That's not going to happen because you're not revving up the other fan base, tickets sold, your other market getting excited and thrilled. I don't think that's going to take place. You want the other team to also have the excitement of playoff baseball.
You do, but what's happening here is, as you saw, in all the situations yesterday, outside of, well, you'll see it today too, like the lesser division team now is going to chance to clinch on their home field, which, I mean, it is what it is.
Look, in a perfect world, shorten the freaking regular season. The players are not going to agree to that, probably along with
the owners,
with the PA or the owners, and then extend the playoff series. So there you go with Major League Baseball on DFW Sports Station. Star season kicks off tonight. We'll preview that with Brent Severn coming up at 8 o'clock. NBA poll, the annual poll came out talking about the association.
Yeah, the GM poll. And what do they think about this year with Luka? What do they think about it with the Mavs? The survey's out. And
Survey says
the Mavericks are, I mean, top three. So here's
in the NBA?
Well, this was predictions. Who is going to win the NBA Finals? This is all 30 GMs. Boston is number one with 83% of the vote. And then Oklahoma City with 13%. And then the Mavericks with 3%.
People are talking about Oklahoma City, like Windhorse and others, as like the no doubt, no brainer, best, most talented team in the West. Like the separation they're giving to OKC has surprised me a little bit. So it's not even a question. Like they should be in the finals. They should be penciled in.
Well, because they were so ridiculously talented last year. Like you could see, it's just we all kind of felt like they were essentially the age of the North Carolina Tar Heels. Like their starting five, I think their average age was younger than the Tar Heels. And so I mean they're incredibly young and incredibly talented. It's just a matter of
who's their 2 and 3. Give it to me.
Like their number two scorer?
Yeah.
Chet. So it goes...
Yeah. Okay.
It goes SGA to Chet, and then...
You're not going to even be able to name me the third.
Well, I mean, because they moved Giddy, and because they went and got Caruso. Yeah.
So that's kind of my point. You can't even name me the instant 2 and 3. Chet Holmgren's not a 2 yet. He averaged 16 a game. Jalen Williams is averaging 19. So... I'm just a little bit surprised. SGA, obviously, baller. Respect. I like him as well. But where's the 2 and the 3?
All right.
Now you want to go with the whole deep, awesome team? Okay, but let's test the stars theory again.
Yeah, teams don't win. Stars win. Boston had 97% of the vote in the East to win the East.
Wow.
Oklahoma City had 80%. The Mavericks actually finished 4th. On average in the East. It goes Oklahoma City, then Minnesota, and then Denver, and then the Mavericks. Then a big
Minnesota,
big
maybe. Was that? Well, obviously, these players voted before the trade. The Cat trade.
Right, yeah. The GMs.
Because I don't know how you. When. Some people. I don't know. I heard Tim Bontemp say he's never heard such differing opinion on a trade like this. Some people think Minnesota got worse. Some people think that they got better.
MVP. Shea is the winner at 40%, and then Luka at 30%. Joker coming down at 7%. Who would you start a franchise with today?
Wemby.
Wemby, runaway winner, 77%. Then Shea and Joker tied at 10%, Luka at 3%. And then Luka did win the which player forces opposing coaches to make the most adjustments. 33%, then Steph, then Joker, Giannis, and Embiid.
I really wish I could buy. I need MVP odds on Giannis because you mentioned it last night in your email. He is being forgotten.
He is absolutely.
He's being thrown in a back seat.
Yes, he is absolutely being forgotten.
Is that just because the league has so consistently shown us like, all right, your turn, and they feel like Giannis has already had his turn?
He is not in the top four voted best defensive players on this list.
Woo!
Hardly anyone thinks Milwaukee can get out of the East. I mean, they weren't in the top there. And he was like, he was the top, I think, power forward on this. But to not be in the top five of MVP candidates, it's pretty stunning.
NBA GM survey. We got some Diamond Cavs as well in your home of the Rangers. It's Sean, RJ, and Bobby. We got Peyton and Caitlin in the back. We're supposed to be talking about Caitlin's other appearances coming up. What's the ask her what the location is. We are a partner of Twin Peaks, and Caitlin is going to be working at Twin Peaks as well as the morning show. So putting in the early and the late hours. Which one, Pepe?
Off Beltline in Dallas.
Okay.
All right.
So there it is. And then she got the birthday tomorrow at the age of 22. So happy early birthday, Caitlin, in case we forget.
I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 22.
Who's that from?
Taylor Swift.
Okay. Hey, look at you with some growth, quoting your girl. Let's head on out to Detroit. The play-by-play voice of the Lions, by the way, it's going to be Howie Kendricks Eric Kendricks. Howie. Gosh, the angel. Howie. Baseball. Got baseball in my mind. Eric Kendricks will be on today with the G-Bag Nation at 5 o'clock. Bobby says that could be the biggest injury worry with who's going to wear the dot for the communication. Kendricks gives the update himself. G-Bag today at 5. The play-by-play voice of the Detroit Lions, Dan Miller. Preview Sunday next.
Jared leans in. There's the snap. Jared on the end around. Gives it to Amon-Ra. He's going to throw it to Jared. It's on the line to the end zone. Jared Goff. Oh, baby, on the receiving end of a pass from Amon-Ra St. Brown. Oh, Ben Johnson, I see you too. That is beautiful stuff.
Lions Radio with the call, and that voice is joining us now in the home of the Cowboys. This is the commercial-free expressway for the next 35 minutes here on DFW Sports Station with Sean, RJ, and Bobby. We are joined now by the voice of the Lions, Dan Miller, on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Once again, back on the show. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Hey, guys. Doing well. Good morning.
Are you just as invested in the Tigers right now as the Lions?
It's been pretty unbelievable just watching what's happened, because nobody saw this coming after they sold at the deadline and were pretty much left for dead, and everybody was just looking to the off season, and then all of a sudden these guys just started pitching like crazy, hitting when they had to, and just kept winning and found their way into the playoffs, and now they're hot, and who knows what the limit is for these guys. But yeah, it's been in a town that's been starved for some success in baseball, it's been fantastic.
Dan, pretend I've never watched football before, as Jason Garrett once accused us of. And tell me what happened in the last 5 minutes of last year's Cowboys-Lions game, if you could just recap that for me.
So before the game, the Lions had told the officials that they were going to run this play and they were going to send two guys over to report. One of them was going to report and one of them was not. Taylor Decker was going to report. Skipper was not. My understanding is that Brad Allen then wanted to clarify before the game, because he was not in that initial meeting, and he went and sought out Dan Campbell, and Dan Campbell explained to him exactly what was going to happen. And they did what they said they were going to do. Unfortunately, things went sideways when Brad Allen then announced to the crowd that Dan Skipper had reported. And at that point, I don't even know what you do. You could have called a timeout, maybe. I don't even know if they had any left, or I don't remember what the situation was. But everything just went sideways after that. They obviously threw it to Decker. He had announced Skipper's reporting, even though in the Lions' minds it was Decker that had reported. And then they get the two-point conversion. The two-point conversion is taken away, and Campbell goes nuts, basically saying, I told you exactly what we were going to do, and we did exactly what we said we were going to do, and you didn't do it right. And that's kind of where it is. I think it was just a situation where the Lions felt like they did everything that they were supposed to do. Was there a little bit of gamesmanship in there? Yeah, there was. Did that confuse Brad Allen? You could say, obviously, it did. So, I mean, that's what it was. And once he announced Skipper, you're kind of losing the high ground there. There's not a whole lot you can do, because things have falling off the rails at that point, because you're throwing it to a different guy.
Yeah. Now, Dan, we've had two people come on this week and say that Dan Campbell will seek revenge for that by definitely doing something tricky and maybe even throwing to a Lions offensive lineman on Sunday. Is that in Dan Campbell's DNA? Will you be the third to think?
You know what's in his DNA is to win this game. I mean, last time out they beat Seattle. Seattle had beaten Dan Campbell's teams in each of the first 3 years he was head coach. They've been to Dallas the last 2 years, and they've lost tough games. I mean, even if you go back to that game in 2022, first series of the fourth quarter, the Lions have the ball at the one-yard line with a chance to go in and take the lead, and Jamal Williams fumbles. So I think they felt like they've had two very winnable games down in Dallas that they have let get away. And that's the kind of stuff that bothers Dan Campbell. Now, look, part of his DNA is just that he does stuff like that. He will fake punts, and he will, you know, at times, we don't really see him go for two a ton, to be honest with you. It's more the fake punts and going for it on fourth down and things like that. So, you know, maybe there's something in their bag of tricks that they try to pull out. I don't know. But they just want to win this game. They're coming off a game against Seattle in which they played their best offensive game of the year. I know they want to keep that going, and they've had some ups and downs this season. So I'd say chief among his objectives going down there is to win and trying to get his guys to get back to playing a full football game. But, you know, obviously there's been a lot of talk about that this week, but guys aren't really buying into it. They just kind of moved on, and heck, we're chasing Minnesota. They're 5-0. Every team in our division's got a winning record, so we got enough to worry about right now.
Lions play-by-play. Dan Miller joined us here, 105 through the Fan. All right, so Campbell Lesher, I know he got killed by the national media, a lot of them, for the NFC Championship game being too aggressive. He's always been aggressive. Is he still as aggressive on fourth down as he was last year?
We've seen some of that. I think this and I know, look, I'm closer to it than a lot of people, and a lot of people kind of dip in and see what happens, and then they want to, you know, judgment on that moment alone. If you go back to last year in the playoffs, they had a fourth down where they scored a touchdown against the Rams. They had a fourth down where they scored a touchdown against the Bucks. They threw the ball with 2 minutes to go when a lot of teams would just run it against L.A. in the playoffs to ice that game. He trusts his offense, and that's really what it comes down to in these situations. And sometimes does that go against conventional wisdom? Yeah, sometimes it probably does. But I would also submit that, you know, Josh Reynolds, who was a heck of a player when he was here, there's two passes on fourth down that if he catches, they've got a much better chance of winning that football game. And normally those were plays that he makes, in particular the fourth down when they were in plus territory. So, look, back to kind of the question that I was asked earlier, that fourth down thing is in his DNA. And then the reason that it is because of the units on this team, he trusts that offense more than any other to go out there, win a game, ice a game, or put him in position to win a game. And I think that's where those fourth down gambles come from.
Dan, is this Lions team better than last year's? And if so, how much better?
Not yet, and I think where it potentially will be better is defensively. They're starting to get their guys back. Their secondary is pretty much brand new, and you have one guy playing the same position he played last year. Brian Branch has moved to safety from nickel corner. You have new corners and a new nickel, and basically during camp, one of those guys was always hurt, so they didn't get much time on task. So those guys need to play together and figure things out together, and that really hasn't happened yet. I mean, if you go back and look at that Seattle game where they gave up 500 yards. Man, they were so close to getting to Geno Smith so many times, but hat tip to him, man. He played a heck of a game. So I think the defense is potentially where they become a better team than they were last year, and I think that's, I would even say, likely. But it hasn't happened yet. It's got to gel. They've got to figure some things out. They're still really good against the run. They were good against the run last year, and that's really where it starts with them. But offensively, look, a lot of the same faces, a lot of the same explosiveness. It really hadn't come together before the Seattle game. You're hoping that it kind of takes off now. But to me, where they had to get better was defensively. I see the pieces there. They just got to figure it out.
Dan, is the offensive explosion and the offense's chances of being better this year than last, does it hinge on Jameson Williams and his breakout?
That's a lot of it, yeah. I think that's fair. You know, J-Mo is, you know, as Jared Goff said to me a couple weeks ago, he's a one-play touchdown guy. I mean, it's just you can get the ball to him anywhere on the field, and if he's got an angle on somebody, he's going to score because you just can't catch him. He's incredibly fast. His speed is something else, and we have seen him run by, you know, corners time after time after time, and there have been times where Jared's missed him, there have been times where he's dropped the ball, but things have seemed to come together for him this year where he looks a lot more comfortable. His route tree has grown. If you look at that play that he made against Seattle, a little crossing route, and he turns that thing into, you know, a 70-yard touchdown, and that's what you kind of felt like he had the ability to do all along. But look, first year he came in, he was coming off an ACL. Second year he came in, he was suspended. So it's just been, this year he could just think about football. It wasn't all the other stuff where he had to figure out how to get back into football after being out for a while. So I think that has paid off. I think his mental approach to the game has changed significantly. And just the way he conducts himself as a professional has improved significantly. So, yeah, I mean, he's got the talent to completely change this offense, you know, in one play and certainly for a season with his abilities.
Lions play-by-play voice Dan Miller joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Okay, Dan, so, you know, you talk about the improvements on defense that Detroit sought out this past offseason. They're playing a lot more man coverage this year. That's something where CeeDee Lamb has typically had a lot of success. Do you expect that trend to continue this week, or do you think that, you know, the Lions will say, hey, let's kind of settle back down into some of these zone coverages and make sure that we're not just letting CeeDee Lamb beat our guys one-on-one?
Yeah, good question. And it's a new cast this year to see how they would want to handle that. I will say this. Obviously, he had a huge game against the Lions last year. That's the defense that Aaron Glenn wants to play. And he was forced to play a lot of zone because he didn't have the talent to play man-to-man for his first 3 years here. And I think he feels like he's got some guys that can match up between Carlton Davis. Terrion Arnold is a rookie. I think he's got a lot of talent, but he's also got a lot of penalties right now because he's figuring out how much you can use your hands and how physically you can be in this league. So I would imagine you're going to see a mix of both, but I would imagine you're going to see a significant amount of man-to-man, maybe with some self-safety help over the top. But I think that a lot of it's going to hinge on how quickly they can get to Dak Prescott and if they can make him get the ball out a little quicker than he has in the past. But it's an evolving thing with Aaron Glenn week to week where he will change, but what he ultimately wants to do is allow his guys to play man-to-man so he can maximize what he can do up front. And I think you bring up a great question. How do they handle a great receiver who torched them last year? I think that's going to be interesting to watch. But my guess would be they're going to try to use quite a bit of man-to-man.
Given the success of Detroit's running game and some of the struggles that Dallas's run defense has had this season, over under in this one for Detroit, 40 rush attempts. Is that too much?
I'd say probably, depending upon, as long as the scoreboard isn't kind of tilted against them and they're throwing the ball, I would say that's probably right where they want to be. It's the strength of this team. It is what this team is built around, that offensive line. That offensive line, for all the guys that we've talked about, that offensive line is the face of this team. And Frank Ragnow should be back for this one. He missed the last game they played against Seattle. And I think once he's in there and you've got those two running backs, you feel like that's the way you can control the game, and then you can pass the ball off of that. So, yeah, I think they'll try to see if that thing's there. If it is, I think they'll keep going back to it. But they're going to throw it, too. I mean, they want to get the ball to Amon-Ra St. Brown. They want to get the ball to J-Mo. They want to get the ball to LaPorta, who's had a bit of a slow start and some injuries to deal with. But they want to get the ball to those guys and be balanced. But at its core, they love grinding it out with David Montgomery, and they love grinding it out with Jahmyr Gibbs. And the thing about those guys is, it's not just, you know, 4 yards, 4 yards, 4 yards. Those guys are perfectly capable of breaking 20, 40, 50 yards, whatever is there. They have that kind of explosiveness. And they feel like if you keep leaning on somebody and keep cracking at it, you're going to find one.
Dan, we had a guest on yesterday, a Lions super fan that works up here, said that Jared Goff is going to go down as the best Lions quarterback ever. Do you buy that?
Well, I mean, let's say this. He has done things that we hadn't seen a quarterback do around here since the 50s, and that's win two playoff games. They'd actually never won two playoff games in a year because back then you only had to win one. But they, I mean, it depends on what happens from here. I mean, look, I think Matthew Stafford is ultimately, with his Super Bowl, he's going to be in the top 10 of every category. He's going to go into the Hall of Fame probably at some point. I think Goff's story is still being written. I mean, he just signed an extension, and if they have the kind of success that they believe that they can have, look, if he gets to a Super Bowl or wins a Super Bowl, yeah, he'll be the greatest Lions quarterback since Bobby Lane. So I just think it depends on what happens from here. I don't think it's an outrageous statement, but I think it's a statement that is still being, you know, looked at and studied, and we don't know what the end result's going to be because so much of his resume at this point is incomplete. But, you know, what he did last year, you know, bringing playoff football back to Detroit, winning two games, getting to the NFC Championship, that's stuff we hadn't seen around here in a long time. And certainly he's got a lot of football in front of him where he can improve on that.
Dan Miller, Lions play-by-play here on 105.3 The Fan. How is the team and the fan base handling maybe being a target? And do you think that the Lions should be viewed as the NFC favorite right now?
You know, I think you can make the case that in some ways they were a target last year. They won 8 out of 10 to close 22 and almost made the playoffs, lost out in the last hour of basically week 18. And I think they went into last season as the NFC North favorite. So there were a lot of people coming after them last year. I think this year, certainly, it's even more so. And I think they've handled it fine. Look, they're a good team.
Yeah.
And, you know, people, I know sometimes people look at schedules or how people view them, things like that. In my mind, look, good teams find a way to win 10 or 11 games, and bad teams find a way to lose 10 or 11 games. So if they play their game, do the things they're capable of doing, stick to their recipe, which, like a lot of teams, is not turning it over, maximizing their possessions, and find a way to kind of get that defense to kick it to gear against the pass a little bit. They're going to be in that 10-12 win range and have a shot at winning the NFC North, which is seemingly getting tougher every week. And they'll be able to handle the teams that give them their best shot, because that's what good teams do. I mean, good teams understand they're going to get that. Buffalo knows they're going to get that, and Kansas City knows they're going to get that, and Baltimore and Pittsburgh, teams that are good every year, know they're going to get that. And, you know, you guys have been through that yourself. So if you're good, that doesn't bother you. That doesn't become a reason you're not where you want to be at the end of the year. It's that you didn't play well enough. So I honestly believe they'll be able to handle that. And this team under Dan Campbell, whatever happens to them, they don't stay down for long. They haven't lost two games in a row since October of 2022. That's the longest streak in the NFL. And that's because he's got a real ability to just get this team ready to play each time out. And I think that's kind of the secret sauce for them, is just his way of setting the tone with them. And I think they're usually ready for what's in front of them.
Now I will reverse things and ask you, how much better, worse, or the same do you think these Cowboys are compared to last year?
Well, I mean, obviously they're beat up. I mean, that's one thing with their defensive line. But I'll tell you, watching the game the other night, you got some guys up there that are still playing like crazy. And the last two games, they've been very good against the run. So I think that there's some good things happening there. Looks like you're getting maybe Bland back in the secondary, which is significant. And Dax, CD, the running attack that you know, I know they'd like to have, maybe hasn't materialized yet, but Dowdle certainly looks like, you know, he might be a hard running guy that can give you something in that regard. And, you know, I'm watching the other night and you're starting to move the ball around. Nine's getting involved on offense now, on end of rounds and throwing in the ball, and Tolbert's getting ready. So I see a team that, you know, is figuring out what to do with what they've got. And it looks like it's getting stronger and better to me. That was a really nice win the other night that you could build off of. So look, when you lose somebody like a Parsons or a Lawrence, that's massive, man. I mean, those are game changing players in this league, and that's hard to overcome. But I'm not seeing a blink. I'm seeing them, you know, bounce right back and find a way to get a win on the road, which is never easy in this league. So I think they're going to be right there. And much like the Lions, they're looking at the division. They see what Washington's doing, and they know they have to keep pace. So I anticipate a veteran team that's going to play this game like they've got to win it and to have a heck of a game on Sunday.
Dan, thank you so much for rejoining us again this year, and go Tigers.
Appreciate you guys. Yeah, it'll be fun. We'll see what happens today, but thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Dan Miller, the voice of the Lions here on DFW Sports Station, 105.3 The Fan. Brent Severn is going to preview the star season that kicks off tonight at 8. Was Ragnow, who you said went ballistic yesterday?
He went nuts on Dan Campbell. Apparently, he punched him. They're in the hallway of the Lions facility, and Dan's like, dude, he just punched me. And apparently it was Ragnow's way of saying, hey, I'm healthy. Like, he just kind of, it wasn't like a fist punch. It was like a lineman punch. You know, like they say, he's got a good punch.
Yeah.
It was one of those things, right? And he just bodied Dan Campbell. into the wall of the facility, which, I mean, do you know how much of an absolute beast you have to be to A, have the courage, but B, the ability to body Dan Campbell anywhere?
That's why I punched the table the other day. It was right. Just to let you guys know I'm good.
Right. Yeah. All right. Sevy will join us at 8 o'clock. This is the commercial-free expressway. Let's go local.
We need to take people out of their bubbles and their safe place and make them think about the world we live in.
You are fake news.
So what do you guys hear? What's the scuttlebutt?
That is right. It is the Neighborhood Watch here on 105.3 The Fan. Yeah, that's right. I'm stealing your you're stealing your swag now. I'm swagger jacking, Peyton. Okay, so our community group post of the week does not come from Facebook this week. Usually it's the Facebook community group post of the week here on the Neighborhood Watch. This week we're going to take it from the Allen, Texas Reddit page. And I don't have any sense for what this is as somebody who lives in an apartment. As what kind of an issue this is. So I feel like you guys are going to have strong takes on this, though, as to whether this is a really douchey thing or not. So the title of the post was, "Caught my neighbor dumping trash in our bin. What would you do?" And here's what this woman writes. She says, "So we live next to a rental property, and the tenant recently moved out. Lately, we've noticed random crap appearing in our trash bins, and today we finally caught the culprit in the act. Turns out it was the property owner from next door dumping his trash from his bin into ours. I walked outside, asked him to stop, explaining that it's illegal dumping and theft of service here in Texas. That's when he lost it. Started shouting, calling us names, saying he could do whatever he wanted. His reasoning, apparently because the trash company owns the bins, not us, he thinks he can use them however he pleases. It escalated quickly. He threatened to leave trash all over the neighborhood and kept charging at us like he was going to attack every time I turned my back to call the cops. Thankfully, the police arrived fast. He was asked about his response. I've been doing this for years, and no one ever complained. The officers encouraged us to call if this continues. He acted like he was in the right the entire time. I don't want this to escalate any further. What do I do? What would you do in this situation? Is this a problem? Like, would you have an issue with this? Do you do this, Sean? Are you the neighbor?"
So for the first probably like 3 months of living in this new house, I didn't do exactly the same thing, but the property across from me is being constructed.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the big blue humongous trash can. So obviously we have tons and tons of boxes left over. And the trash cans that I got, because I didn't want to get ripped off by the city paying for their trash cans, what they charge me per month. So I got my own trash cans.
Oh, you're allowed to do that.
What?
Get your own.
Get your own, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But the ones I got were not the humongous ones. I didn't realize it. They're expensive. So I got it delivered from Home Depot or Lowe's, but they're nowhere near as big as what Dallas County had given me at my last house. So, man, come about 8:39, I wait for the sun to go down, and I just pile up these boxes and walk them on over. Quincy, I hope you're not listening. You did a great job building the house, by the way. And I'm just throwing, I mean, tons and tons and tons and tons of cardboard leftovers into the big blue bin. I would never go and maybe if I had a bag of dog poop and I'm walking up and down in my last neighborhood, maybe if the trash cans are still out, I'd open up the trash can and throw the dog poop little bag in there. But I'm not taking like my usual kitchen trash and throwing that into someone's other regular trash can. I was throwing it and a lot of it in these big, humongous blue bins, but I didn't want to get caught.
Look, the blue bin,
I mean, there's a monster.
It's nothing wrong with that. And I know that one is the technical illegal one.
Oh.
What did that guy say? Illegal dumping?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. If your if everybody's trash is already out on the side of the street, now if you walk up to some neighbor's house and like they have their trash cans on the side of the house and you just throw yours in there, like that's not cool.
What if it's sitting on the curb?
If it's sitting on the curb and the trash man hasn't come yet and you're out of room, put it in your neighbor's. It's all going to the same place.
Ooh.
It's all going to the same place.
I know it's going to the same place, but I don't want you dumping your trash in my personal trash can.
It's a bag. It's not like it's loose trash.
Look, the worst trash I've ever thrown out was the fault of Brian Broaddus when he had a crawfish party over my house. Now, it's kind of my fault because he offered to take all the crawfish and dump it in the back of his truck, but never, ever, ever could I get rid of what was in that trash bag from from the crawfish party because of Broadus.
Oh, it's like leaking juice?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, so, that's different. That's totally different. Totally different animal.
I don't know.
Totally different animal.
I'm going to be a hypocrite here, although what I did is not exactly the same. If it's a neighbor I like and you got a bunch of like little styrofoamies or something, and they ask me like, hey, we're out of room. Is it all right? But don't just willy-nilly walk on over without the permission and dump it in my trash can.
There's a lot of varied response here.
I've got a much, like, because I'm already paying for the trash. It's the same service. Like, the blue dumpster is a totally different service. We're not paying for that. You know, like, so we're actually, like, that.
Yeah.
But I still have no problem with that because the whole thing is, it's a trash can, man. You're supposed to, what you want me to do? You want to just leave it out there, litter? No, it's a trash can.
How do I know, though, that, you know, and how does the other person know if they're dumping two bags of trash in my personal trash can, I'm not going to have a big load to take out the morning of, the night before?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You only do it if it's already out there. So if the trash is already at the curb.
But I've had it. I sometimes I'll do that. Like this morning, like I could walk out with an extra bag of like diapers. I don't. What I'm trying to say is when I roll the trash out mm-hmm. to the end, sometimes I add trash to it.
Oh, yeah. I never do that. I do it at the very, very end.
I'm against this.
Lots of responses, passionate responses. 972, bust all the guys' windows.
Damn.
Is the response.
Well, that's eye for an eye.
469, take his trash out of my bin and throw it over his fence.
and
817, I asked before I dumped S in their trash, and every time the neighbor was like, sure. 469.
Yeah, you're a real jackass neighbor if you say no.
Would you say no, Sean?
I would never say no. Now, again, it's got to be like in a bag. I don't want you just throwing like, I don't want you taking like a tub of brisket and just dumping it inside there.
One time, very rarely, I'll say yes and cool. You can't do it every week.
940 says once it's on the street.
You need to go buy another trash can.
940 says once it's on the street, it is public property.
That's
so they're dumping
right,
in it at
baby.
That point.
That's right. I got in trouble with that.
469, stop being weird. If it's on the curb, let someone dump in it. 559 says I did the exact same thing recently, Sean. So this is very split, and it's very, very passionate responses.
This is like parking. This is like parking in front of my house. Yeah, I guess technically it's public property. I don't want you parking in front of my house.
Peyton, you would have an issue with this, right? Because you had a problem with
if you don't have a lot of room, then...
Well, I have a ton of room, but I still don't want it.
you've seen it.
The circle.
Park across the drawbridge.
Peyton, you were the guy who had an issue with somebody cutting an inch into your yard, so you would have a massive problem with
this is more like 3 inches, and he hasn't done it since I talked about it on the payload the other week.
So really?
Maybe he listens. I don't know. I never see him.
All right, let me ask this follow-up. Would you be more cool with this or the neighbor who lets their dog pee in your yard?
I'm gonna say
pee, because obviously poop is too easy. But they clearly let the dog like come into your property, squat down, and pee. Which one do you have a bigger problem with?
As someone who's in an apartment, so this is like telling you how I'd raise kids when I don't have any. I would be more cool, I think, with someone putting trash in my bin than I would just letting their dog come in and use my yard as their waste.
I'm more cool with the pee.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, dog. I don't care if they pee or poop in the yard. It's like it's just, as long as you clean it up.
You got to. Well, you can't clean up the pee.
Well, no, but that doesn't bother me like at all. Yeah,
same.
Yeah, I don't care. Pee or poop in the yard. The only problem is if you poop in the yard, the dog does, and they don't clean it up. Then it's like, okay.
That's illegal dumping.
That's literally illegal dumping.
Yeah. All right, we're doing Neighborhood Watch here on 105 Through the Fan.
Peyton had a huge problem with the neighbor, too, letting the dog go in your yard.
Yeah, and that was poop, and then I don't think they even cleaned it up. Yeah, they just left it there. That's a problem. The pee, I don't care. If I can't see it, I don't know about it, I don't care.
That's when you pick it up, you find the dog, you walk
fart
over.
It back.
No, you make him eat it.
The dog.
No, remember, he loves dogs more than people.
The owner should have to.
All right, everybody remember how they woke up last Friday? It was from the blue alert telling you, there's a police officer that was shot up in Lubbock and that somebody was on the loose, but made it sound like it was right there in your own neighborhood when the alert went off early in the morning.
So what determines when it makes the noise on my phone? Because I get plenty of other alerts that do not make the sound.
If your phone is turned, even if it's completely on silent mode, you won't hear it. If it's even on vibrate, it'll go off.
I've had these alerts turned off for years. For 5 or 6 years on the iPhone, I've had them turned off.
You can just turn off
you can go to settings and turn off all Amber alerts and everything.
The FCC got a ton of complaints about this blue alert. 4,500 Texas residents complained to the FCC about this.
Just because of the time of day?
Yeah, because it was before 5 o'clock in the morning. A bunch of people just mad that, like, why did this happen? Now, the FCC says they don't send those notifications, but they do regulate the communications providers that deliver them. So they got 4,500 complaints. They have not said how they plan to respond to it. This is from Fox 4 News. A spokesperson for Texas DPS told Fox News that the alerts are meant to warn people of danger and get violent criminals in custody faster. However, statewide amber and blue alerts managed by DPS are only supposed to be sent between the hours of 6 a.m. and 11 p.m., including on holidays and weekends. So why this one went out, there's not a lot of clarity about yet. That was last Friday. And the FCC did get just inundated with complaints. They did acknowledge they've gotten a bunch of complaints. They've not said how they're going to handle this yet. But not good. Not good there for the DPS.
You have people that have trouble sleeping. I have no problem. Like, I wake up, I'll go right back to bed. But there are people that if they wake up, they're up. There ain't no going back to bed. And that can't happen because of this.
When was the last time you ate in the West End? Sean, has it been a while?
The West End?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like over by Dealey Plaza, but like that area.
I can't remember.
So that was a booming spot in the 80s and 90s.
Booming.
Like that was the cultural epicenter of Dallas, like where people go down there to eat and do other things. So over at Eater.com, they were talking about kind of lamenting this idea of what the West End has become and how, you know, it's not really a big spot anymore because of just the different restaurants that have struggled out there and the safety concerns. There's a lot of people who feel like just there's too much crime down in that area. They won't go down there. So there are two restaurant owners down there, Tony Street from Wyo Ranch Steakhouse and Jay Khan from Liam's Steakhouse and a couple other venues down there.
Jeff Ruby Steakhouse is there. That was one of the places I was supposed to go in Nashville.
Yeah, that's Jack's brother, Jeff Ruby.
You don't think so?
I mean, it is in Dealey Plaza.
It does make sense.
It's right down there. They're working to attract more people. So they are trying to do a bunch of different community outreach efforts. One of the big things down there that they've been proponents for is the safety improvement. So they want increased security, increased lighting. That's a big problem for a lot of people. They feel like it's not well lit down there, that you don't get a lot of, you don't feel very safe. You're kind of in the dark for whatever, blue alert criminal might be lurking around the corner to come get you. But those two really doing a lot, apparently, to kind of revitalize the area, fighting for better parking and other things, because they're like, hey, this is a historic area, and we've kind of let this slip here in Dallas. We needed to come back.
The Neighborhood Watch with Bobby Roberto Belt and company every single Thursday during the commercial-free expressway. Is it Stanley Cup title or bust for your Dallas Stars? The season starts tonight. Let's preview it with Brent Severn, one of our favorites, next on The Fan.